their report to Congress, their final report yesterday morning, and you heard a discussion about it yesterday with Catherine Shenazi and Dov Zakheim, both of them commissioners on this program yesterday, and you also heard Bob Henke this morning on with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive, both of those conversations posted now at federalnewsradio.com. But not everybody thinks the Commission on Wartime Contracting got everything right among their 15 recommendations. Stan Soloway is the CEO, president of the Professional Services Council, former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense, and here to talk about some things about the Commission's work that he doesn't agree with. Stan, good to talk to you. Thanks for coming on this afternoon.
Always a pleasure, Francis.
Let's start, before we get to what you didn't like, were there things that you did like?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be overly negative or harsh. I mean, the Commission, over several years, really dug deep into some really critical issues, and they raised a lot of very legitimate questions and some of the recommendations and so forth. While I might not agree with them in detail, it's sort of irrelevant, some of the organizational questions and so forth. They're touching on things that we've known for years have been a challenge. We knew before Iraq and Afghanistan, and certainly even in the early reports, we did a lessons learned with the Army Materiel Command in 2004 that identified some of these issues. The Special Inspectors General have identified these issues. So I think they identified some important issues. They attempted to make some recommendations. And I think that, you know, around workforce and planning and coordination and a lot of those questions, I think that they were right on target. My biggest concern is that that kind of gets clouded over or pushed to the side with some of the kind of higher-level rhetoric and sexier topics that they try to touch on, where I thought some of the solutions might be a little simplistic.
Well, for example...
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk both publicly and in the report around the role of private security. We don't represent a lot of private security firms. We have some as members. But it seems to miss some of the discussion that took place over the last several years around just the sheer reality of a war zone and the security needs in a war zone and the fact that the costs of using military or even diplomatic security personnel just are so high and impossible to meet that they really had no choice. Now, was it as well managed as it could be? Absolutely not. We industry had made recommendations 7 years ago around changing how they're structured and managing and overseeing security contractors. And frankly, some of the security contractors are very much a part of that discussion, but nothing changed. I think that the statement, and this is going to be a little philosophical, but the statement that there's a de facto over-reliance on contractors actually missed the really critical point they made. It's not so much that there was an over-reliance on contractors. There was an under-attention to the infrastructure you need to support the realities of a war zone. And so I'm not sure that in any logical layout of how you would strategically resource from a manpower perspective your needs in a war zone, you'd necessarily see a dramatic change of the number or scope of contractors in theater. What you would hope to see, what you could see, and what they talk to is a need to change the infrastructure around it, the number of acquisition people, the acquisition capabilities, the duration of their service in theater. You know, oftentimes the deployment rules are 90 days and you have to come home. That's some of the civilian rules. So by focusing on we have way too many contractors, you detract from the real core question is, what is my need in theater? What's the mission? And how do I best manage and oversee that mission? And while they make that point, I'm afraid that some of the other rhetoric kind of shoves that to the side. And you can argue with me.
Well, when I read the report, I didn't see that. What you call the rhetoric didn't strike me as that. My major takeaway was the infrastructures that are in place are not sufficient to do this, especially when we recognize that it's not just possible but likely that we'll be in this situation again.
Yeah, and the other message I took away from it, maybe it's some of the public commentary that accompanied the issuance of the report, not just on your show but elsewhere as well, yeah, what you're saying is correct, but boy, this was the wrong way to do it. I mean, there was this sort of, if you looked at some of those examples or some of the statements around project failures and so forth and waste, which is a fascinating topic, by the way, you could get into a whole serious discussion about what is waste and how do you define it, what is its cause. They seem to just lay it at the feet of the companies and say, you know, this was a waste and company X made a fortune on it. And no attention is they heard from these companies in the hearings and from the Army and from others, the state and USAID, that a lot of what we determine to be waste is in fact waste, but it's driven by the unpredictable circumstances that you get in a contingency environment. Let me give you an example. So that they have an example in there of a building project that was a tremendous waste because they criticized the government for flying in all of the parts and having to have all this private security, ignoring the fact that in Afghanistan, overland transportation of those parts was virtually impossible, and the security environment required security. So if you want to make the case that if you're spending 20% of your money on security, that's 20% of the money that's being wasted because it's not getting to the project, okay. But how do you point a finger at that and say, you could change that? That's the reality of the zone. So I think that you have to take all of these things in context, and some of that seemed to be lost in some of the discussion on the report.
What else, what's the other major bone that you have to pick with this?
I think that those are the two big ones. I mean, I think that, they did some very good stuff. Took out some of the most provocative recommendations that were in their interim report that I think the administration, industry, folks on the Hill all objected to. But I come back to this sort of the whole question of the role and use of contractors, because there does seem to be this sort of constantly laying death, delays, and waste on in these insurgent contested areas. Their words, not mine. On the contractors there, but in that sense, ignoring sort of what the special inspectors general and others have said, which is, yes, there's been some fraud, there's been some waste, there's certainly been poor performance. I'm not going to whitewash any of that. I'm not suggesting perfection here. But there is a whole family of factors to blame here, some of which are controllable and some of which are not. I'm not sure the commission made that distinction clearly enough to drive a really good discussion. And so they tend to lead to some of these sort of broader sort of quantitative judgments about how many of this and how many of that. There's the grids that they've laid out and the kind of algorithms of how you determine numbers and so forth. I just don't know that in a contingency environment with unpredictable security needs, surge requirements and so forth, that it can be that neat and clean. I'm not suggesting it's pretty. And as I said, I'm not whitewashing anything, but I don't think it's quite that neat and clean.
One of the elements that I talked about pretty extensively with Dr. Zach Heim and Ms. Shinazi yesterday, and Bob Henke also mentioned it to Tom and Amy on the Federal Drive this morning, was the recommendation in particular about the creation of a standing IG that's comparable to the cigar and the cigar that exists now,
right.
But that were stood up specifically for those theaters. Having something, an office like that exist on an ongoing basis. Also, the coordinator who will have one foot in OMB, one foot in the National Security Council, and the assistant secretaries at the national security agencies to oversee these kinds of things. How do you feel about those ideas?
I think that the organizational questions, I don't pretend to be the one who should comment and say, well, this one's right, this one's wrong.
But they make a difference to your members.
Yeah, I'm not sure our members would that's the organizational structure is really not going to be that important to most of the companies. I mean, they're there to support the mission and whatever the organizational structure is, it is. I think that what you have to keep in mind is, as you said, there's a general agreement that we're going to be in this position again, but how soon, how big, how large, and how long is the engagement becomes a question, and therefore that backs you up to what kind of a permanent infrastructure do I want to put in place versus a flexible infrastructure that enables me to respond when the balloon goes up, because it becomes a cost issue and a manpower question and so forth. I remember going back, and the good analogy here is the Balkans and a number of the issues that we were dealing with in the Balkans, some of which came back again in Iraq. And I was in DOD during the Balkans and was fairly involved in some of these issues. And one senior executive said to me, a government executive said, what's going to happen as soon as this war is over, these issues are going to go away. We're not going to deal with them again until the next time we're at war. And sure enough, some of these issues crop back up again. So there's clearly a need to try to maintain focus and consistency of policy around it. Clearly, the world has changed. The nature of engagement overseas has changed. Whether it needs the scope of the kind of infrastructure, permanent infrastructure they're talking about, or some rethinking of roles and responsibilities, maybe on a more limited basis, I think is an open question. And clearly, the administration and Defense Department and others have some heartburn with some of the recommendations, so they'll have to work that out.